Hello and welcome to Coven. Each week we bring you stories of fascinating people from throughout history whose lives echoed the ways of the modern day witch.
And bonus points if they own cats.
I'm Riley.
I'm Jenna.
And we're curating our Fantasy Coven roster.
But before we get into that, we're going to talk about our magic moments of the week. So this can be anything like synchronicities, angel numbers that we're repeating, our horoscope being super accurate, or just anything that felt super special and magical throughout the week. So
yeah,
you want to start?
Yeah, I think for both of us, this is a collective magic moment. Mm. Our first episode.
Yeah.
And there was a lot that had to happen for this to come to fruition. So yeah, I don't know if you want to share about how we got here, what our intention is in doing this and starting this. Yeah. But I feel like, yeah, there's a lot that had to come to be for this to come to be.
Yeah, it was crazy how it all shaped, how it all turned out to be, because it started out as we had a movie idea. We wanted to make a movie. And we still want to make a movie, so I'm not going to talk too much about that.
Yeah,
but
don't give it away.
We were going to make a movie, and something happened where it was just like the perfect exact moment. I bought a last-minute plane ticket to New York back in October.
Yes.
To go to this event with Riley. Literally, it was Thursday night, 6 p.m., and I bought a plane ticket that left at 8 p.m.,
and I forced her to do this.
Yeah, I texted my boss, my manager at work, and I was like, I'm so sorry, but I really need to do this. This is like stars aligning, perfect moment, need to come to New York.
Yeah.
I came for a single day, and by the time I left, I think we'd pretty much had our podcast
idea. Yeah, we had this idea fleshed out for the most part.
Yeah. Well, then it shifted into Coven, what it is now.
Yes.
But we definitely knew we wanted to do a podcast.
Yeah, and to just share the stories of people that maybe aren't in the forefront of a lot of people's minds.
Yeah, or they're like misunderstood.
Yes.
Or their story isn't told through the lens of like magical spiritual lens.
Yeah, magical, spiritual lens that both of us just see the world through in our day-to-day lives.
Right.
So,
and we're not historians.
We are not experts.
We're not experts by any
means.
On
anything.
We just love learning about these people.
We're two friends.
Info dumping.
Info dumping. So please have that in mind as you listen to this. If you want to listen to a history podcast,
there's so many of those.
There's a lot of history podcasts.
I actually listened to a lot of them in doing my research for all of these people. So
we're just compiling it and chatting with you, our listeners and friends.
Okay, did you have another magic moment, or was that your magic moment? That counts as your magic moment, but are you...
It could, yeah. But also, I think I was... So at the time that we're recording this, was it a week ago, I think, exactly? Yeah, that there was a Gemini full moon.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
There was a Gemini full moon.
On November 27th?
7th, I think.
Yes. And I feel like it was the first full moon that I have experienced in maybe 3 years that didn't fully wreck my life.
Yeah.
I am a Taurus. I feel like we need to say this too. We need to tell the girlies. I'm a Taurus sun.
Yeah. I'm a Sagittarius sun.
Pisces moon, Cancer rising. And the last few years have been really rough and intense.
Taurus Scorpio eclipses.
Yes. So
honestly,
it was
for both of us, but
but mostly Taurus.
Okay, Taurus sun, but
yeah,
I'm a Leo rising, so the Taurus Scorpio eclipses were in my 4th and 10th houses, which when you have eclipses there, it's like your whole life is going through a big old upheaval.
But yeah, so it was just really nice to have a full moon where I didn't feel anything super intense. I didn't even realize until I got some like notification that was like, there's a full moon today.
Well, it's interesting it was ruled by Mercury, because Mercury rules over Gemini, and Mercury was forming a square with Neptune.
Okay.
So it was kind of like there was like something blocking this full moon a little bit.
We love that.
Yeah. So it was like, I feel like that did kind of dim it down.
Yeah.
In a way.
And Gemini in general is not necessarily a
super intense,
scary sign. We love you, Geminis.
Yeah.
Shout out to the Geminis.
Shout out to the Geminis. My magic moment, I have two that okay. I was going to do.
I did two too, so that's great. Yeah, true.
So the first one was just this crazy, I had like an epiphany. I don't even remember what it was, but I opened my notes app to write it down on my phone. And it was just as one does. And it was, I saw the number, I had 777 notes.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, that's funny.
That's actually a lot. That's insane.
Yeah, I guess that is. Sorry. I'm a writer.
Same. I wonder how many I have. I
probably a lot. That. Now probably I have like almost 900.
Oh my God.
And that was a month ago. Wow. Actually, that's a lot. Anyway, so it was 777 notes. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at the time and it was 10:27 p.m. And I looked, and then the date, it happened to be 10:27, October 27th. Oh, wow. And I was just like, that's lots interesting. Of numbers. Yeah. I didn't really do with it. I was just like, that's noticing. Cool. And I wrote it in my magic moments.
What's the significance of sevens?
I don't know. Well,
we can cut that out.
Yeah. I'm an astrologer.
She's an astrology expert. Resident.
I am the resident astrologer in the house, but Riley knows a lot about astrology too.
I know a decent amount. I do my best.
She's who I talk to about all of the astrology things.
Yeah.
But I'm not a numerologist. I feel like I have scratched the surface. I know a little bit. I mean, like, seven on the Enneagram is, like...
True.
Freedom, right?
Gemini vibes.
Oh, kind of. Yeah. But that was 10:27. Oh, my God. But that was exactly a month before 11:27.
Wait.
Gemini moon. 27. What does 27 mean? Hey, if you're a numerologist...
Hit us up. Let's chat.
I guess, like... 2 + 7 is 9. So that would be like the vibration of 9, which is like higher octave of 3 because it's 3 × 3.
Okay.
So it's like,
I don't know anything about this.
Maybe it's like communication and peace and kind of like completion cycles. Okay.
That's interesting too, because I feel like that corresponds with Enneagram 9, which is all about peace, which I am an Enneagram 9.
I do feel like The Enneagram does correspond sometimes with, like, astrology things. The only thing that I feel like it doesn't is 3 on the Enneagram is, like very competitive, the achiever.
Yeah.
And 3 in astrology is, like, the third house, like, Gemini.
Yeah.
And that's, like, not super competitive or, like, status-driven, I feel like.
Yeah. It's more I feel like some Geminis are because of the whole, like, two-faced. People are going to yell at us.
They're not like,
they thrive on connection.
Yeah. And it's more just because they're adaptable that they get the two-faced
Mercury
stereotype. Community. And Mercury, Mercury feels like they like to connect and communicate, but not necessarily like dominate.
In an image-focused way. I don't know. I feel like a lot of the...
Maybe they are a little bit.
My 3 best friends outside of Jenna are all Geminis. And
she's dragging no y'all shade, right now.
Absolutely no shade to them. But one of them specifically is...
We can cut that out.
She's a little image focused.
Name drop, name drop.
She knows. You know who you are.
Harsh, brutal. Yeah, well, Riley's a Taurus, so with an Aries Mercury, so very tell it like it is. But then Pisces moon softens that a bit.
I cry a lot.
Tell it like it is, except for sometimes don't.
True.
I'm a Sagittarius sun.
Yeah.
Aries moon, Leo rising.
Her freaking Aries moon.
Yeah.
Aries moons, I'm surrounded by them.
Well,
not necessarily anymore. I think you're like the last one standing.
I told you, I was surrounded by Pisces moons everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
My mom is a Pisces moon, and I have so many friends who are Pisces moons. My other magic moment that I was going to talk about.
Yes, your other magic moment.
I went to, when I was researching for this episode, I went to McKay's, which is a used bookstore in Nashville, Tennessee, which is where I live right now, but not for long. But yeah, we're in Riley's and Jeffrey's beautiful apartment in Brooklyn. So.
Nobody knows who Jeffrey is.
Well, Jeffrey's our wonderful producer.
Yes, Jeffrey is our producer.
We love him and we're grateful. Anyway, so my other magic moment.
Yes.
I went to McKay's in Nashville, Tennessee, and it's a used bookstore. I was going to find books for research on this episode and ended up stumbling upon the book The Alchemist.
Oh, yeah. The Paulo Coelho one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I read that in high school, but not really.
I know everyone did, and I did not.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I need to read it, yeah.
Okay, you need to read it.
I know. Recommendations.
Cool. I had been thinking about it because somebody, I just like been thinking about alchemy and wanting to learn more. And I randomly stumbled on it. It wasn't even in like a section where I would have expected. I don't remember what section it was in.
Mm-hmm.
But you would think that would be in like fiction or like literature.
I don't know.
But it was in like a, almost like a science section or something random.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, this is weird. But I feel like I need to read this because this feels really intentional.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up reading it in like 2 days, which for me, that's fast. I know some of y'all read books and like whatever, but it took me 2 days, which is really fast because I could not put it down. It was like the best book and it was so perfect for where I'm at in life.
Sweet.
So you need to read it.
Yeah. It's been on my list for a while. I'm also terrible at reading.
Yeah.
But
well,
I used to love it and now
it's a good one. And it's good for ADHD because it's short.
Oh, okay.
And I feel like it moves quickly.
Yeah. We're also both neurodivergent. That's why she said the ADHD thing. Take that into account as you're listening.
Yeah, we're going to get sidetracked.
We're going to be all over the place.
I'm just realizing now.
But that's how it goes.
That is how it goes.
I know you can relate. I know you can relate, listener. Yeah. So we're gonna get into who Jenna is covering this week.
Yeah.
And first up, she's going to show me the birth chart or estimated birth chart, because some of the people that we're going to cover in this podcast are from ancient times. We don't have records, birth records or birth certificates.
Yeah.
So we're just gonna do the best we can on that and trust that the universe guided us to the right thing.
I'm going to tell Riley this person's birth chart or show her this person's birth chart. And she's going to tell me who she thinks, not like the specific person, but what kind of person she thinks this is that I'm about to tell her about. Well, she doesn't know who I researched. So.
Yes. It's a surprise. That's part of this.
Yeah.
It'll always be a surprise. Okay.
Shall we?
Shall we? Yes, we shall.
Let's begin. So, this person didn't have an exact birth time or date even. Okay. There's just a widely agreed upon year.
Cool.
So, after the year, and based on what I know about this person, I kind of guessed their birthday, her birthday.
Okay.
Based on what felt correct. And
cool.
The chart that I found is like really accurate, I think. So
based on
I'm rolling with it.
Okay.
But I have no other reason to believe this person was born this day. I just
think it feels right. Okay.
So she is a Sagittarius sun.
Oh, is she?
She's a Sagittarius sun. I put her birthday as December 21st.
Okay.
And I'm not going to tell you the year because I don't want to give it any too much away.
Okay.
Sagittarius sun conjunct her moon. She was born on a new moon at 29 degrees. So Sagittarius sun, Sagittarius moon.
Okay.
And Aries rising.
Okay.
Then she has her Mars conjunct Neptune in Capricorn. Did you process that?
Mars conjunct.
So Mars in the same place as Neptune in Capricorn.
Okay. Okay.
And then her Mercury is also in Sagittarius.
Okay.
Her North Node is also in Sagittarius.
Damn, I'm like, I mean, I know I should know hypothetically like Sag energy, but I feel like especially applied to like someone from a long time ago, I'm assuming, because we don't have their
info,
their exact birth date and everything. So that leads me to believe it was a long time ago. I'm like, what would Sag energy look like in ancient times?
Well, and what's fun is that the inner planets, we don't know if I have correct, but the outer planets, we are pretty sure because the year.
Right. Okay.
So we know for sure like Neptune and Capricorn. We know for sure North Node and Sag.
Okay.
Which I'm happy about because I guessed Sagittarius for this person. And I was like,
so this is like a philosopher, potentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mercury, Sun, and Moon are all in Sagittarius, and they're all opposite Uranus and Gemini.
Okay.
And then Saturn is in Cancer, in her fourth house.
Okay.
Venus is in Aquarius.
Okay.
And Jupiter's in Virgo.
Okay.
Okay, so what do you get from that?
Who
is this person? Yeah, just roll with whatever. Like,
okay, all the Sag is giving philosopher, it's giving teacher, it's giving, like, student becomes the master.
Mm-hmm.
It's giving. And then what else do we have?
Jupiter and Virgo. I think plays a big role.
Okay.
Especially because she has all the Sagittarius placements, and Sagittarius is ruled by Jupiter.
Okay.
So her Jupiter, I think, and because she's an Aries rising, that's in her sixth house.
Okay.
Jupiter, Virgo, sixth house.
Got you. I don't know.
Squaring all of it. Yeah. Well, I'm excited to explain as I tell the story, like, what.
I am not the expert. I am not the astrology expert here, so.
But you know a lot.
And it's so funny because, like, with the ones that I have research too, I'm like, oh, it makes so much sense, like, their chart totally completely reflects exactly who they are, but then, like, getting your information, I'm like, I don't know.
No, but you're dead on about all the Sagittarius stuff.
Okay.
That's definitely accurate. What do you think about, I found this one really curious, what do you think about Saturn in Cancer in her fourth house?
I do think that's really interesting, because, like, Saturn's about, like, responsibility, and Cancer obviously is, like, mothering, nurturing. So I'm like, how did this play, like, a role in alongside the, like, potentially, like, philosopher teaching kind of, I don't know, is that, like,
right,
does that reflect something, like, specific that happened in their life kind to you, or about their personality?
All of it, kind of. I thought that was really interesting because it's, like, kind of the, well, it's, like, the only water in her chart. And it's, like, one of the only feminine placements in her chart.
Yeah,
and
true.
It's so opposite the rest of her chart, because most of her chart is in her 9th and 10th house, and even 11th house.
Okay.
And that's in her 4th house. So it's, like, kind of opposite all of these prominent placements, like, expressed placements, but it's such a powerful one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll get into what that means,
okay,
too.
Well, I'm excited. Are you ready to start? You want to talk about this more?
Yeah, let's talk about who.
Who do we have? Who do we have? Our first guest.
Welcoming Hypatia of Alexandria into our coven.
Okay, let's go. I know nothing about her.
Yeah, the more I researched about her, the more I fell in love with her. She's, like, the coolest character ever.
Tell me her story.
I'm excited. Yeah, so let's go ahead and get into it.
Hypatia.
We're going to dive into Hypatia of Alexandria.
Let's go.
There's also, like, some controversy on how to say her name. When I first read it, I said Hypatia.
So no one come for us.
But in all the podcasts that I heard, everybody seemed to say Hypatia.
Cool.
But no one's super sure which is the correct pronunciation. But yeah, so Hypatia, before I get into her, I want to set the scene for where she lived and the time period, and give a little backstory. So,
great.
Can you please, sir, am I allowed to look at this paper now? Thank you. He's my assistant. No, he's my assistant. He was just making sure they didn't fly away. Yeah, thank you for that. So Hypatia, she is in Alexandria. In the year, she's born 355 AD, is a pretty...
Where is Alexandria?
...widely agreed upon year. Alexandria is in Egypt.
I really didn't make that connection. I really don't know anything about her or anything about this.
Yeah, I didn't
know
actually
I'm excited to learn
where Alexandria was either. Just, it's not something I ever really thought about.
Yeah.
You hear about it all the time, like the Library of Alexandria.
Right.
But I'd never really considered much about it.
Yeah.
So I want to give a little history of Alexandria, when it was formed and up to the point where she enters the picture. You can have that one. So Alexandria, it was actually a state or like a settlement in Egypt called Rakotis. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. When Alexander the Great came to Egypt.
Oh, that would make sense.
Yeah, right?
It's Alexander, named after Alexander.
Exactly.
Wow.
He was a really interesting conqueror, also gay. It's widely believed. Anyway, he was a really interesting conqueror because he didn't come in with violence to the places that he was conquering. He came in with, like, kind of wanting to get to know people and blend with their culture and become one of them.
So
and
he then just like conquered with vibes.
Yeah, he conquered with vibes, exactly. So when he came to Egypt, he already had a lot of success elsewhere. And Egypt at the time was like a 4,000-year-old empire.
Okay.
Like, that's insane. Like, yeah. No, what kind of dynasty, what other dynasty in history has lasted that long?
There's probably a couple.
Yeah, well, but I guess I just don't know history that well. But
you could have looked that up.
That's crazy. So he comes in.
That is crazy, though.
He comes in around, like, 330 BCE. He's born in, like, 350.
BCE?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's born in, like, 350-something BCE.
Okay.
He comes to...
So that's like 600 years before...
Hypatia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Correct. So he comes to Egypt around like 330 BCE and he's like, okay, how am I going to conquer this massive 4,000-year-old dynasty? Mm-hmm. He decides to just become one of them. He adopts their religion, adopts their culture, learns their language. All
right.
And they all really like him.
I mean, if you're going to conquer...
I know, that's the way to do it. So I'm like, the girls and the gays.
We do not support
the
conquering.
The girls and the gays are the only ones
we
who...
We do not support...
We also don't support...
Colonialism. We do support learning your surroundings.
Yeah,
and
for sure. And if you're, like, going somewhere new to get to know the people. Anyway. Yes. Anyway, so this is how he chose to conquer. He did end up, like, getting on their good side, and they all trusted him.
Okay.
And eventually, I think it was something like he went into a temple, and there was, like, some ritual that happened that actually said, like, he should be a leader.
Oh, wow.
And so they were like, yes.
Okay.
And just, like,
they're like, here he is. Okay.
He was like, hey, I think I want a city named after myself. but he was really big.
As you do as a conqueror.
He was really big on knowledge. Like, knowledge is power. And this was kind of like the Hellenistic period came after he died officially. But this was sort of in a time like paganism was the dominant religion because this is BC. This is before Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
So there's Judaism and paganism. But Hellenistic culture is like ancient Greece.
Right. Okay.
Technically, it's between Alexander's death and Cleopatra's death.
Wow, okay.
It's considered Hellenistic. Anyway.
I need to brush up on my history.
I just learned all of this. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of, or getting way sidetracked here. But, yeah, so he thinks that knowledge is power. This is a common belief. He wants to create a city that is the center for all of the knowledge in the world.
Okay.
And he wants to call it after himself, name it after himself. Mm-hmm. So he's like, Alexandria, that's pretty.
Cute.
He finds a city, Rakotis, on the very edge of the Mediterranean Sea and near the Nile. So it's also a really good commercial, like, trade, import-export city. It's, like, in a really good place that, like, where Rome and Greece can access. So he basically is just like, here's my colony for Greece.
Cool.
In Egypt. And then it later becomes the capital. He dips from Alexandria right after he's like, yep, that's the one. Gotta go conquer other places. And leaves his plans to the architect. And fun fact, I'm pretty sure I read this correctly, but the grid system that we use today in our cities is largely believed to have originated with Alexandria and this, like, architecture's plan for the city.
Interesting. That's crazy.
Yeah, the grid system, grid-based urban system.
Right.
So, few generations later, so Alexander the Great dies, and he leaves his empire split between, like, his besties, he gives it to Ptolemy, who's, like, his bestie, right-hand man.
And we know what that means.
Ptolemy is like, okay, so you bestie can have Greece, you bestie can have Rome, and I'm gonna take Egypt because I want to be a pharaoh. So instead of...
He said, I love their costumes.
Literally.
He said they wear really cool clothes. Cool.
Well, also because the pharaohs in Egypt are like, they're gods. Like, there's no, there's no separation for them between gods and politicians. Like, they're selected by gods because they believe that their leaders are gods incarnated, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, I'm a god, so yeah, this sounds sick. So he's like, I'm gonna be the pharaoh. And so for 4,000 years there was the dynasty of pharaohs that were, you know, the blood descendants of the pharaohs.
Alexander
4,000 years, not Alexander the Great.
Oh,
the 4,000-year-old Egyptian pharaohs.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Ptolemy is like, Okay, actually, God just told me that I am now, or I don't know, a god. Because the Egyptian culture pagan as well. Like, multiple gods.
Right. Is that pagan?
Or yeah, is it just... pagan is, like, nature-based and, like, mm-hmm. gods over... Wow, I should not say this, like, I confidently know, because there might be actual pagans that
we
know.
We are not experts.
Repeat. My understanding of paganism mm-hmm. is... gods over, like, all different things. Worshipping okay. multiple gods, and they're over, like, the elements and the things that are influencing.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. So,
like, the ultimate god in paganism is, like, the sun god. And it's
different between different cultures and stuff.
I think so.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because, like, the Hellenistic...
If you're a pagan, please let us know.
Yeah, chime in. Tell us where we're wrong.
Write in.
I think the Hellens had a different kind of take on paganism than
okay.
the Egyptians. Obviously, I believe it's like you. Egyptian mythology and Greek
right,
mythology.
Right,
that's
okay.
basically paganism.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
To my understanding. Anyway.
Anyway.
So. It's going to take so long.
I know.
So Alexander the Great, he dies. Ptolemy is like, I want to be a pharaoh. So okay. he's like, yeah, and I'm going to be Pharaoh Ptolemy the First.
There you go.
So the Ptolemaic dynasty of pharaohs in Egypt begins. And... after he dies, the second Ptolemy the Second, really is the one that makes it the educational epicenter. Also, sometime along the way, Cleopatra comes, but that is another story.
That's for another episode.
Yeah, she's a few hundred years before Hypatia.
Okay.
And a few hundred years after Alexander the Great.
Okay.
Anyway, so Ptolemy the Second is like, Alexander the Great wanted this to be the center that holds all of the knowledge in the world. So he's really the one that starts gathering every book in the world. That's the goal for wow. the Library of Alexandria. Mm-hmm. The goal is that it holds it's the center of all of the universe's information. And then it becomes like this center where people travel from all over the world to learn about all of this information. So it becomes like one of the first, or at least like the most influential university, essentially.
Wow.
Not really until, but there is a huge curveball that happens when Caesar,
with
Caesar's siege of Alexandria in 47 BC. So a few hundred years go by,
okay.
and Caesar is all on his like hot seat,
you know,
ego trip. Caesar. And he's like, I want that city. There's also some, that's another story. But he comes into Alexandria and is like, fuck this place, and destroys a lot of the library at that point.
Dang.
There's a lot of other things that happen that have destroyed the library way more up to Hypatia. So the library was like okay. not in a great place when she was alive, but it okay. still had a lot. Anyway, it still becomes this huge center for education and lots of professors, intellectual pursuits. They're slowly, once Rome takes over, because after Caesar comes in, Rome is in charge.
Okay.
Once Rome's in charge, there slowly becomes more religious tension,
mm-hmm.
especially mm-hmm. after Christianity rises.
Of course.
So give it like another 100 years, Christianity is there. Maybe 200 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And Rome is in charge, and now it's a Christian city. So there's, like, representatives from Rome, representatives from Greece, representatives
right.
for Egypt, but there's also a patriarch of the city.
Okay.
And so Rome really rules over the city. It's kind of like a Roman client city
okay.
I think it was referred as.
Yeah.
In comes Hypatia. At this point in time, so... in the 300 AD, is that what it's called anymore? AD or CE?
CE.
What's the official term?
Yeah, CE. Common era.
In about 300 CE, Constantine the Great passes this decree that Christians are no longer liable for prosecution. And then fast forward to the next Roman emperor, Theodosius, he outlaws paganism and forces Christianity as the dominant religion.
Yep.
So Theophilus, who is the patriarch of the city at the time, at this point, it's 391 AD.
Okay.
Hypatia's already alive.
Okay.
But Theophilus says, he likes what's going on in the city with the education. So he's like, okay, yeah, I think this is a fair thing. I'm going to destroy all the pagan temples, make them Christian churches. But he doesn't really get involved with anything else because he believes that it's a city for that should be safe for education and knowledge. And he's not trying to mix church and state, basically. Yeah, he's like, yes, we're the correct religion, but like y'all can be pagans, Jews, whatever.
Yeah.
So Alexandria at this point, in a world full of religious tensions, becomes a safe haven for education and knowledge. So people of all different cultural backgrounds and beliefs come and study together, which is like really remarkable for the time.
Definitely.
Of everybody fighting over what they believe in.
Yeah.
And there's a quote that I wanted to read from Magnus Zarian. That says, about this time, it says, it's not so much religion that makes the character of a people as the people who determine the character of their religion. Religion is only the resume of national ideas, thoughts, and character. Religion is nothing but an expression. It is not, for instance, the word or the language which creates the idea, but the idea which promotes the word into existence. In the same way, religion is only the expression of a people's mentality. And yet a man's religion or philosophy, while it is but the product of his own mind, exerts a reflex influence upon his character. The child influences the parents of whom it is the offspring. Language affects thought, of which originally it was but the tool. So it is with religion. The Christian religion, as soon as it got into power, turned the world about.
Wow.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty powerful...
Definitely.
Quote. So that's the backstory on Alexandria and where we're at when Hypatia's born.
Scene is set.
Scene is set. That took so long. I did not expect that to take so long. But that's okay. You really know what we're working with now.
Yes. I needed to know all that.
Okay, so Hypatia is born in 355 AD.
Okay.
Her father's Theon. Theon is a well-known Greek mathematician and astronomer, and he's the head of the Platonist school of Alexandria.
Nice.
Not much is known about her mother, if anything at all, which is why Saturn in Cancer in her fourth house, opposite everything else, makes a lot of sense because it's like the mother and like the feminine side of her. There's a block, but it's also like Saturn represents the father sometimes. So being in the place of Cancer in the fourth house, it's like her father was her mother. And her father, which is, interesting. She is likely Macedonian, or no, sorry, not Macedonian. She's definitely known to be one of the last of the Hellenes. So one of the last of the people to really embrace the Hellenistic culture. She's considered pagan only because she's not Christian, but she didn't personally identify with anything. So her dad teaches her all that he knows, mathematics, astronomy, music, and she very quickly surpasses him in abilities. Yeah, and in reputation. Before long, she takes over as the head of the Platonist School of Alexandria. And she's a professor, and people are coming from all over the world to hear her speak.
Taking over.
Like Sagittarius, the philosopher, but the teacher. She just apparently had a really huge passion for teaching and was just a really fascinating person to listen to. And it's interesting because usually when you're looking up historic figures, there's some like discourse on like the type of person they were, if they were good, if they were bad, and like people liked them or not. Everything that's written about her is just pure adoration. Like, everybody loved her. And that's so rare and was really fun to read. There's a quote that somebody, one of her students wrote. She's described as the lady who legitimately presides over the mysteries of philosophy. So she was clearly very respected. Knew what she was doing. She, yeah, she was studying arithmetic, geometry, music, philosophy, and astronomy. And when she became a professor and a philosopher, her main thing that she was teaching was Neoplatonism, which is the philosophy of, it's basically like the philosophy of Plato, with a twist.
Yeah.
It comes from Plotinus, and it's his take on Platonism, but okay. with a sort of mystic spiritual layer and Ooh. Make it everyday life.
There we go.
So his intent, this is a quote, his intent was to use Plato's thought as an intellectual basis for a rational and humane life. Mm. And that really is like a quintessential example of the Hellenistic or Greco-Roman intellect yeah. and where people's thought were at the time.
Totally.
And what Alexandria really was. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody mm. was in this stage of, like, they really wanted to be enlightened because they were like, knowledge yeah. is power, let's do this. But they believed it was a spiritual quest equally as it was an intellectual quest.
Yeah.
And she was just, like, beloved in the way that she taught all of this.
Yeah.
Yeah, she also had... So while she did a lot of public speeches in the city and around town, and she mm. taught at the school, and she was the head of the school, she also had her secret society.
Ooh, secret society. Yeah,
of men.
Oh.
Of men from all over the world who were supposed to be, like, the most respected, brightest minds who okay. were on a quest to enlightenment.
I thought that was going somewhere spicy.
No, but, like, okay. maybe, like, honestly, like, all of her Sag placements, maybe she was, like, yeah. actually the path to enlightenment is all of you. No, it's actually funny because one of the things that they, that she taught them or that she told them they needed to do and that she also practiced.
Learn how to please a woman.
Was no, celibacy.
Oh.
Which I think is so
yeah.
amazing because how many times throughout history do men tell women they're not allowed to have sex?
True.
And in this situation, she was telling like the most the respected script. Men in the world mm-hmm. they're not allowed to have sex.
Yeah.
And they just like obeyed her completely.
Love that.
Fully followed her.
Powerful.
Yeah. There's not much that we know from her. Like, we don't have a lot of her work that's survived. Okay. And we'll get into the why in a moment.
Okay.
But everything we know about her comes from what other people have written about her. Mm. Specifically, Synesius of Crene, who was a devoted student of hers. He was in this group, mm. and he wrote letters to people and to her
okay.
About her and what she talked about and different things that happened. And he loved her. So we have a lot of really good information from him. But unfortunately, we don't have a ton from her. We know that she wrote a book on math, like a math textbook, basically. We know that she probably wrote a book on astronomy, and that's the only, like, actual work of hers that we have. I feel like there was probably more that got destroyed. She was labeled as pagan. She just definitely, so her main thing that she taught is Neoplatonic philosophy. Mm-hmm. It was really about rational spirituality. And, you know, that's like my whole thing that I really True. Believe in, like combining intellectual studies with spiritual studies.
Yeah.
So learning about her was just like blowing my mind. And learning about Neoplatonism, it's like everything that I aligned with. So I was like, wait, am I a Neoplatonist? Neoplatonist. I should probably make sure I'm saying that right.
That sounds right.
Yeah, it was really interesting. She believed that numbers were the sacred language of the universe. Ooh. So she would teach Numerology. Astronomy, which at the time was hand in hand with astrology, and astrology mm-hmm. obviously goes hand in hand with numerology. She wanted to combine the cultures too. She wanted to combine Greek thought with Egyptian wisdom and Babylonian science. Babylonian science also was the astronomy and the astrology. That's where tropical astrology was really founded.
Wow.
Well, where it was founded.
Yeah.
We know that she, so it's unclear, there's debate here, but we know that she invented or just used and knew how to build this device called the astrolabe, which is a tool that measures the time of day by calculating the degree of constellations in relation to the horizon.
So a clock.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't, it sounds just like a clock. I guess they just didn't have, like, clocks yet. I don't know. No. When was the clock invented?
I have no idea. But, well, yeah, it was, like, sundials and stuff. So maybe it was just a smaller.
But it feels like we'd have clocks by then.
I don't think so. When was time invented?
So true. When was time invented?
We should look this
but
up,
But it
probably.
Seems like, I don't know, when I think of the Roman Empire, I feel like they would have clocks.
Guess not. Producer, can we get a check on when clocks were invented?
Yeah, Producer Jeffrey, when were clocks invented? Thank you.
I love when people ask their producers to
look
things up during their...
So the clock came 1270 to 1400? To 1300.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Thank you, Jeffrey. That's crazy. So it was like a full 1,000 years.
Yeah.
That's insane. So Hypatia invented time.
She invented time. Yeah.
Hypatia invented time.
That is, who's the ruler of time? Saturn?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say Saturn.
And Saturn rules over Sag?
No.
Oh.
Capricorn and Aquarius.
Cut that out.
But she does have a lot of Capricorn and Aquarius in
I was going to say, does she have, because I can't remember. I'm sorry, I didn't memorize her chart from when you told me it.
She does have a lot of
Aquarius.
And Aquarius.
Because of all her inventiveness.
Her Venus is in Aquarius. Her Mars is Capricorn. So is her Neptune.
Okay.
And Capricorn's her midheaven.
Oh, okay.
10th house. So.
Girl boss.
Yeah, makes sense. But the astrolabe, I feel like they don't really know what it was used for. I think they...
Telling time.
They believe that it was used for ship navigation. Yeah, telling time. Because they can measure time based on the constellations. But I also, that reminded me of astrology a lot. And the way that we practice today, the rising sign is based on the constellation that was... Or the segment of the zodiac that was rising on the eastern horizon at your time of birth.
Yeah.
And so it just feels really connected to that in some way. And
yeah.
I just feel like she was probably super astro ho.
Definitely.
Just because I want her to be.
And also she was an astronomer.
She was an astronomer. Yeah.
Astronomer.
And that was intertwined
yes,
with astrology.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that just kind of
Because they used
goes with
all
everything.
The, yeah, the constellations and everything. Ooh,
yeah.
Now I want to know who came up with all of the... I feel like we've talked about that before. Like, who came up with all of the characteristics and stuff for the signs?
The Babylonians. Well, it's kind of morphed. The Babylonians and, the Hellenes, so that time period in between Alexander the Great's death and Cleopatra's death.
So she would have known,
yeah.
What's a Gemini's vibe?
But it's changed. Like, where it is now has adapted with where we are now.
Okay.
And over thousands of years, we've created our archetypes and where they exist now.
Okay.
But they definitely had their... I don't know how much they used it in personality assessment. I feel like they were using it... I need to do more research here too, but I think that they were using astrology more in the prediction with the transits and what kind of energy
to
expect
would happen
in the world
okay.
rather than personality assessments.
Yeah, we're just all obsessed with ourselves.
Yeah,
now.
I think that was more of a recent thing.
Individuality.
But they might have. I'd actually like to look into that.
Yeah,
more.
I'm I want to imagine that Hypatia was going around being I'm a Sag, so you know, everybody listen to me, I know everything.
She wouldn't because she believed in
she was a humble queen.
Neoplatonism was all about detachment.
Mm.
So she would wear very simple things, walk around barefoot. That's why she told her students to practice celibacy because basically detaching from anything that binds you to earth.
Yeah.
So your body, understanding that your body is temporary and when you have these sexual urges, it's basically a distraction. You need to keep your mind in the right place at all times. In that way, I'm not a Neoplatonist fully.
Yeah.
But I think that's
mind
a really interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
You see that in a lot of belief systems around the world.
Oh, yeah.
So she had these men adoring her. She was highly respected. She invented not only the astrolabe but also they think the hydroscope, which is a modern day hydrometer.
I don't know what
which
that
is used to measure specific density of liquids.
They
know what it does but they don't know what they used it for.
Okay.
That's another really interesting thing. They have all these tools that they know what they do but they're not really sure why. She also invented a more efficient form of long division.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for that.
Thanks, Hypatia. The main people that she was studying and the main people that she was teaching from, like the people she was inspired by, were Plato, Plotinus, Aristotle, mm-hmm. and Pythagorean. Mm-hmm. And she really combined so many different things. It was like she was a teacher of philosophy, mm-hmm. but that's just because philosophy was the umbrella yeah. that covered all the things she wanted to combine. Yeah. Combine music and numbers and the astronomy. Stars, astronomy, yeah. and history and philosophy, all yeah. of these things. And people just loved her. She just had something about her that was enchanting, and everyone wanted to listen to her. Mm-hmm. I was going to talk about some stories from Hypatia's students and how she kind of handled people and conflicts in her class, whatever. Yeah. But I just want to preface, because I don't think I really made it clear, because she wasn't the first female philosopher, but she was definitely the most popular, not only female philosopher in her time, but mm-hmm. one of the most popular philosophers or minds of that time in general, man, woman alike. You can have it if you want. I'm done with those.
Thank you.
But so now that I kind of got that out of the way, because I don't know if I made that super clear, but yeah, she was just super famous at this yes. point in her life. Some of her students, like when she was teaching, it was a time in Alexandria when religious tensions were heightened. So she had people mm-hmm. in her classes that were Jewish, Christian, and pagan. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they would get into fights. And there's a story about two students, I think it was a Christian and a pagan, getting in a fight, or maybe a Christian and a Jewish person getting in a fight. But Christian and a pagan getting in a fight in mm-hmm. her class. And she just, like, looks at them like they're getting heated and whatever, and she just looks at them and is like, we're alike, right? Like, you and I, we're similar, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, yes, because he loves her so much. She's yeah. like, yeah, I want to be just like you. And she's like, right, okay, and you're like me too, right? We're kind of alike. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, yes, I'm exactly like you. And she's like, wait a second, so you're like me and you're like me, yeah. then aren't you both like each other? Mm-hmm. And they stopped fighting.
Yeah.
Obviously, it was not those words, but that's the idea. And I just thought verbatim. There's something really endearing about that. Yeah. Because it's like, yeah.
Finding it's so the common simple. Ground, diffusing, and yeah.
Yeah. And it also just shows how much they just admired her, because yeah. they wanted to be like her. Yeah. And so, of course, yeah, how can they argue with that?
Yeah.
Another fun story was, there was a student who was in love with her. Absolutely in love. Which I'm sure he was not the only one.
Yeah.
Also, she was reported to be beautiful, but I kind of hate even saying that. I know. Because every...
She doesn't need to be beautiful to be important.
Yeah, every woman in history, right. people largely focus on their looks.
But also, like, all women are beautiful.
All so. Women are beautiful, yeah. I'm sure like, she of was. Of course she was beautiful. Anyway, so I'm sure a lot of people were in love with her, because I would be in love with her. Like, yeah. how can you not be in love with her? This man was obsessed, though. Like, mm-hmm. to the point where he was following her around. He was not giving up, no matter mm-hmm. how much she said to him. No matter how much she was like, I'm just not interested. Leave me alone. Mm-hmm. He was obsessed with her. She even tried playing music to cure him of his ailment. like, playing, like, certain frequency music
wow.
That she thought would cleanse him, and it didn't work.
Of his adoration.
Yeah, of his adoration, which is also funny. So this one anti-love was funny to
frequency.
Me. Yeah, yeah, literally, because of her Saturn and Cancer.
Yeah.
I'm like, this was kind of funny. Like, yeah, she believed in her philosophy system mm-hmm. that you needed to be celibate.
Yeah.
But I kind of wonder if that mm-hmm. had something to do with, like, her maybe intimacy blocks, or her, mm-hmm. like, block from her divine feminine, or, like, nurturing or mm-hmm. love yeah. side of it. There's yeah. rumors that maybe she did have relationships throughout her life, but this is just, yeah, that was interesting.
What was her
to
Venus
me.
Again?
Her Venus is Aquarius.
Okay.
And she's yeah. an Aries rising, so her 11th house. And her Mars is in Capricorn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Moon and Sag.
Yeah.
So.
Not the lovey-doveyest. Yeah.
Pretty distant, pretty reserved.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she tries playing music. This guy is still obsessed with her. So she takes out her used period pad, or whatever they used at the time, towel.
What?
Bloody period towel.
He probably
throws it at him. And the quote is... In truth, this is what you love, young man, but it is nothing beautiful. Throws it at him, and that cured him.
Wow. He's like, oh, that's like all men. That's disgusting. Yeah. Get that away from me. Oh, my God. And
it's interesting because there's a lot debate about what her attitude was in doing that. Yeah. Some people are like, she hated women. This shows that she hates women.
No.
I think, I don't think that's the case at all.
She's just trying to get this man off
her back. Or people think that she hated being a woman. That's why I was going to say the non-binary thing. Like,
yeah,
maybe Hypatia was... I would identified like a little bit more middle of the spectrum with womanhood, but I think it was more her saying like, you're in love with a body. Like what you think is me is not me. It's this, this blood, this body that's just existing in this realm.
Yeah.
Like who I actually am is not what you think you want.
Yeah.
You want this body.
Wow.
And it cured him. So whatever, it works.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Try that out next time, guys.
Yeah, next time.
Following you around.
For real. I bet it would work real fast. You can't get someone to leave you alone.
Throw your tampons at men that you don't like.
Yeah. So she was just great. Everybody loved her. The patriarch of the time, Theophilus, we already kind of talked about him.
Right.
He was Christian. He didn't agree with her because she was pagan, but he just stayed out of the way.
Yeah.
Because he... believed in like the separation and that education is important.
Right.
Well, he dies. He dies, unfortunately. And there's a lot of debate on who should take his place. And his nephew, this dude, Cyril. Cyril, I think.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
He
basically
forces
history.
Himself into the position of the patriarch. There's like fighting about it because people don't necessarily like him. He's really aggressive.
Okay.
He's very violent in his tactics. But instead of people like voting and picking who they want, he basically forces himself into it.
Okay.
Orestes, who is the governor of Alexandria, or he's basically the representative from Rome.
Okay.
So he's like purely government. He's not to do with the church. So there's the patriarch and then there's like the representative.
Okay.
And that's Orestes, the representative. Orestes has actually learned from Hypatia before and is a friend of hers. He really admires her and he'll consult her on decision making just because he values her wisdom and her advice. Yeah, that's also how powerful she was.
Like, yeah.
Everyone loved her, truly. Cyril is this aggro creep who's just obsessed with power, clearly. Yeah. He sees how Orestes acts with Hypatia, and Orestes is looking at Cyril and his, like, claim to the throne of the patriarch, and he's like, uh-oh, this guy's bad news. This could be really dangerous. So he writes to the Roman emperor, and he's like, yo, control your dude, because this is
not
good.
Come get your
mans. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cyril finds out about this and is like, no, fuck this dude, Orestes.
Yeah.
He's got to go because he's a threat to my power. And he obviously just wants like full power.
Yeah.
But he knows that he can't outright say, hey, everybody, Orestes sucks. I don't like him. Throw him out because too many people love him. But he decides he can use Hypatia because technically paganism is outlawed at this time. Hypatia is a pagan. Orestes was Christian technically. Hypatia is a pagan. She's a woman. And the Roman emperor, the Roman Empire is... largely a patriarchal system, well, is at this point.
Yeah.
And he's like, he can use Hypatia as a weapon against Orestes, basically.
Okay.
Especially because she consults with him. So he starts spreading rumors about her that she's an evil sorceress, like basically controlling Orestes, influencing all of his decisions and undermining him for the sake of power. And he says, see, she even has all of these evil witchy tools that she uses, like the astrolabe. What even is that? It's some dark magic. It's some dark magic tool. Our assistants are really helping us. He starts spreading these rumors that she is an evil sorcerer, a witch. And keep in mind, she's
witch
not even...
trials.
Yeah. She's not even pagan. Like, she really just is purely intellectual and, like, enlightenment focused. But they just pin her as pagan because she's not Christian.
Right.
So it's just really interesting. They, like, put this identity on her. And people start to buy it, even though she's this beloved person in their society and they've never had any problems with, and she's helped them out, like, in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
She's now, like, the center of a lot of gossip around the city.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, to make a real strong point... Because Cyril's also getting jealous because he sees she's still going out and, like, giving her speeches. Because also you have to understand the scholars at the time were safe. They were protected.
Okay.
It was just known that no matter what the religious tensions were, scholars, professors, philosophers were protected.
So that's what they valued.
Yeah, that's what they valued. Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was still doing her thing. She wasn't getting involved. Even though she was friends with Orestes, she really was not getting involved. She was still going out and about, and Cyril saw the crowds that she drew, and he didn't like that either. So he was like, she's also kind of dangerous to me, but it's also easier to weaponize her. He eventually goes to this group of men that he created, parabolas, I can't remember what they're called, parabolas or something.
Okay.
Basically, this group of Christian men that were organized by the church to essentially be, like, charity, like, service workers. Like, they're supposed to help with the sick.
Okay.
And he decides to turn them into his personal army. And this is, like, 800 men.
Oh, shit.
And he tells them, he orders them. It's up for debate if he's the one who ordered them. Mm-hmm. But it's largely believed that he is. That he ordered them to basically take care of Hypatia. So she's 60 at this point. She's, like, lived her life, and she's, like, thriving, whatever, in her carriage on her way home. They attack her. This is the year 415 AD CE.
Okay.
They attack her in her carriage.
Oh, my God.
Pull her out of her carriage in front of Cleopatra's Needles, which is where we went.
Yes.
Those are the needles that you saw. Now you make the connection. We literally saw one of the needles because they have them in Central Park.
Yes.
So they, this mob that's supposed to be like these like charity workers, attack Hypatia for no reason other than because Cyril said so.
Yeah.
And they pull her out of her carriage by Cleopatra's Needles. They strip her, which was like a huge, I mean, obviously even today that's a huge sign of disrespect, but I guess it was like this whole
dehumanizing
then.
Wow.
And dragged her into the nearby church, which used to be a pagan temple, but it was like one of the ones that was destroyed and turned into a church. Trigger warning: if you're triggered by violence, maybe skip the next few minutes. So they flay her skin with translation is either
my mirror
ceiling
neurons
tiles
right now.
Or oyster shells. One or the other. And then dismember her body parts.
Oh.
Like, just, like, the most brutal death. This woman who's, like, revered by everyone in the world.
Yeah.
Like, everyone loves
Holy
this woman.
Shit.
No one came to her rescue. Nobody's reported to have tried to stop it or help.
Yeah.
Then they carry all of her dismembered body parts out of the city and burn them. True witch's fire.
Yeah.
And Hypatia was not even considered, like,
Holy
she wouldn't
shit.
Even consider herself pagan, let alone a witch or any of this. She was purely intellectual
fucking
in her
brutal
perspective.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's fucking insane.
Yeah. So after that, that was a huge sign of, like, oh, no one's safe from this religious tension. That's really when the Christian church rose to the power that it did.
Wow.
Because it was like, oh, they'll do anything.
Yeah.
And so no one wanted to test it. So all of these scholars, a lot of people started leaving Alexandria because it was no longer the safe haven for intellectual studies.
That is crazy.
And it just was not, it's still to this day, it's I mean, it's just never been what it was after that. So she's really like
the death of
Alexandria.
Wow.
In that way.
That is insane.
The worst part about that is Cyril, in the year 444, I hate that it's an angel number, was appointed to sainthood.
Wow.
By the Catholic Church.
Dang. Yep. For what?
Because for expansion of the church, but I think they said we'll ignore the
bad parts there.
Yeah, and, they were like, he was really adamant about expanding the church, is like what I read online. And also that he helped translate, or there was like some mistranslations that he caught in the Bible, so they gave him like a doctorate too. Like, he called him doctor and gave him sainthood. Awful. And then meanwhile, Hypatia, everything we know about her is pretty much destroyed. They kept the textbooks, and I believe personally that that was because they were helpful textbooks, and like it helped them.
Yeah, probably.
But all of the philosophy stuff, we don't have any of it.
Yeah, and just completely some people exploit her.
Right.
The things that she contributed to society.
Yeah.
Of course. That's insane.
Some people think she didn't write any philosophy things, that she only spoke it, because that would kind of align with her.
Yeah. And that would be common. Belief. That makes sense.
Yeah. But I feel like there was probably just so much more that we should know
about her. Wow.
Yeah. So that was, and her death is definitely what's most famous, but I wanted to focus on everything else that she was, because she was just like
incredible.
An incredible woman. So Hypatia, she brings to the table wisdom, independence, boldness, curiosity, creativity, and that combination of the intellectual and spiritual pursuits. And for that reason, that's why I welcomed Hypatia into our coven.
Wow. Love that. What an incredible first episode. Yeah. Wow. Oh my God.
Love that woman.
And just full circle, like truly, like tragic in the most tragic way, like our first witch.
Witch. And that's like, it's crazy, because I was not even thinking about her death.
Yeah.
When I was researching her. I'd heard of it, but that wasn't why I was picking her. I was picking her because of what she stood for and what she embodied.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then just the fact that her death.
And that it really was all twisted, and then she. To be fucking brutally murdered in the ways that.
Exactly.
Many other women later in history would be as well.
And it's just crazy. Such a common thing for, like, it's just for whatever reason seems so easy to weaponize women.
Yeah. When you're threatened by them.
Yeah, when you're threatened by them. More so than men. People seem to back men throughout history a lot more than they will stand by women. Even this woman who was, like, so loved by everyone, it seemed to just, she was kind of, like, abandoned when it really came down to it. And that is so sad to me.
Because people are scared of authority.
Yeah.
Yeah. Insane. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. I'm excited to hear yours.
Yes, we'll be back next week with our second episode, and I will be sharing a story about, it's really like completely opposite of, in some ways very opposite of Hypatia. So it'll be a good one.
I'm excited to hear it.
Email us your magic moments at covenpod333@gmail.com. Yeah. Follow us on Instagram at coven.pod. Follow us so you get notifications for new episodes. Yeah. I think that's a thing. Yeah. And thank you. We're so excited.
Bye.